Hare Krishna. Welcome back to our Mahabharata characters series. We are discussing Bhishma and the third part in the Bhishma series. So we discussed how Bhishma took a very fierce vow of lifelong celibacy in the first part. In the second part, we discussed about the fatal complication by which Bhima unintentionally ended up antagonizing Amba, who took a vow to kill him, and by the benediction of Shiva was reborn as Shikhandi. He or she was born as a female Shikhandini, and then believing the words of Shiva that their offspring would be a male, Drupada and his wife announced in the kingdom that they had got a prince, and eventually they got him married to a princess. And when Shikhandini, seeing the confusion that had resulted, went to the forest, and she was helped by a Yaksha Stuna, who exchanged the gender with her, and that's how Shikhandini became Shikhandi and returned back to the palace. And then all the confusion and the fury that had been created were because of the anger, because of the princess of Dasharana telling her father that how I have been married to a girl like this. So the father had come to attack Drupada, but then by that time Shikhandini had changed her gender to Shikhandi, and then the two kings met and everything was pacified. And Sthuna had told that for this time you will have my gender, but at that time Yaksha came to visit Sthuna, and seeing that Sthuna had so nonchalantly given away his gender, he said, "You have disgraced us Yakshas by accepting a female gender like this, so I curse you that you will have to stay with this female gender." So other Yakshas over there begged to Kuvera, and they said actually it was only out of compassion that he did this. He saw a damsel in distress and he could not tolerate her distress. That's why he did this. So please don't punish him so severely. So then Kuvera said that as long as you live, as long as Shikhandi is alive, you will have a female gender. When Shikhandi dies, then you will get the male gender back. So after this, Kuvera departed, and then Shikhandi came back to return the male gender to Sthuna. And Sthuna told her, no, it has been arranged, told him or her, whatever you want to say, that arranged that you will have this gender throughout your life. Now at this point we wonder, isn't this too fantastic, the idea of somebody just being able to transfer the gender like that? Actually it is not, because ultimately the soul is different from the body, and the soul does not have any gender, and the soul gets a particular body with its associated gender based on one's karma. And those who are having higher powers, those who are living beings living in higher lokas, higher levels of existence, they have higher powers. Just as we can change a few things by our capacities. You know, we may have a person may have a very skinny body, and that person can do exercise, and the person can change the body from very skinny to muscular and strong. So that is, we have certain capacity to do small changes. The devatas have capacity, the higher beings, the yakshas are not entirely on devatas on the same level as Indra or his associates, but they are also higher beings than humans. So they have certain powers. And today we also develop certain powers through science and technology. We have surgeries which do gender change. So what is possible for us after great effort through some mechanical surgical adjustments, that is possible for the higher beings by some karmic adjustments. So the karmic adjustments means the devatas have by their higher karma by which they have got the post of devatas, they have the power to make changes in the material level. The Bhagavad Gita explains in the 13th chapter that all of us have been given a certain kind of kshetra. Idam shariram kaunteya kshetramitya vidhiyate etadyobeti tam prahu kshetrajna iti tadvidaha. Krishna describes that idam shariram kaunteya, this body is our kshetra, it is our field of influence, and different souls depending on their karma have been given different spheres of influence. An amoeba has a very tiny sphere of influence. A blue whale has a giant sphere of influence. Its own body itself is giant, and it can control other beings also with its body. So depending on karma, different people have given different spheres of influence. The spheres of influence is the body and the capacities that are there in the body. Just as we can't fly, but the birds can fly. Similarly, the higher beings have powers to bring about changes at the material level, which we can't bring about unless we do great efforts through surgery. So for example, Indra, if his elephant gets injured, and Airavat gets, say, in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described in the fight with Ritrasur. Ritrasur caught the mace that Indra had thrown and he threw it back at Airavat. And Airavat's tusk broke and his face became bloodied. So Indra just touched his hand, and by touching the hand, Airavat got healed. Now this is not magical. This is the power which Indra as a god has. We, to heal, will have to apply some ointment, do some surgery, and then afterwards healing will take place. So that is how we bring about. We have got limited influence on matter, and by that we can require greater efforts to bring about change in material things. But the devatas have got higher powers, and that's how they can bring about change in material things more quickly. That's how this gender change happened. And after this happened, Shikhandi went back happily. And Shikhandi then knew that I am born to take the life of Bhishma. So Bhishma knew about this. How? Because Bhishma, after all, was a diplomat. And he knew that Amba was dangerous. She had vowed to take revenge against him. In fact, she had provoked Parashuram to fight against him. And so he had always kept spies to keep a watch on her. And then he knew that she had performed austerity against Shiva, and austerity to Shiva to gain a benediction. And then he knew that she was born again as Shikhandi. So Bhishma treated Shikhandi as if she were like a woman. And that's why we'll see in the later time when the war took place and Shikhandi was shooting, Bhishma did not fight back. Bhishma did not shoot arrows. Because the Kshatriya principle is that Kshatriya does not fight or attack a woman. And he saw her as a woman because that's what she was in her previous life. And that's how Shikhandi eventually became the cause of the death of Bhishma. So here we see, although Bhishma did not give up his vow, and although he knew that that Amba was going to be cause of her death, he did not interfere with her austerities. He did not stop her. Because he knew that if I have done something, if that is my karma, I'll get the reaction. So he did not give up his vow, but he did not, like a politician who wants to stamp out all enemies, he did not try to stamp her out. And then, not only that, even when Shikhandi came, he, out of a code of honor, refused to attack her. And that we will see later on. So now, in the meanwhile, as all this was happening, so we have gone through three generations now. There was Pratipa, whose son was Shantanu, and Shantanu's sons were several. There was Bhishma, who took a vow of celibacy, though he had no descendants. Then there was Chitrangada, who died before marriage, and there was Chitravirya, who had now two wives, Ambika and Ambalika. Amba was also brought from the Swayamvar for him only, but she refused to marry him, and she wanted to marry Shalvi, and then the whole story happened. Now, through Ambika and Ambalika, Vichitravirya was expected to beget the next king. But unfortunately, Vichitravirya became sick, and he got infected by a terrible disease, and he died without producing any heir for the throne. Now again, there was a great crisis. If there is no king, then the enemies will attack. Not only the enemies from outside, other kings will attack such a kingdom, but even from within, the thieves and the rogues, they will become more and more reckless, fearless, shameless, and they will plunder the citizens, and such a kingdom which does not have a proper king will plunge into chaos, bring misery to everyone. That's why it's the responsibility of the royal family to ensure that a responsible king is entrusted the responsibility. Now all this while, because Shantanu had departed, Vichitravirya departed, Bhishma was acting as the acting king, the caretaker king. And at this time, what to do? So Satyavati, who was the stepmother of Bhishma. Bhishma's mother was Ganga. His father was Shantanu. Shantanu's other wife was Satyavati. Satyavati approached Bhishma and she told him that the only way our dynasty can continue now is if you produce progeny. you have to get married. So Bhishma said, this is impossible. He said, no, it is for your father's sake that you decided that you will take a vow of celibacy. Now it is for your father's sake that you have to get married. How will your father's dynasty and your great dynasty continue if you don't get married? So he said, no, I can't do that. I've taken a vow, and in no circumstance can that vow be changed. That was itself a part of my vow. That under no circumstance can my vow be changed. And as he was thinking, he said, no, but you have to think about the larger well-being of this, of our community, of the kingdom. He said, oh mother, please don't ask for me something which is impossible for me to do. There will surely be some other way, and this is a test of faith for us. Then she came with another proposal. So actually here, you know, Bhishma had all justification to give up his vow of celibacy if he had wanted to. You know, he had taken the vow of celibacy for a particular purpose, and that was at the bidding of Satyavati's father. And now that same Satyavati was telling him that, you know, you give up the vow. So sometimes we take up some resolutions, and if we are half-hearted, then we are just looking for some justification to give up the resolution. But Bhishma's resolutions were like lines in stone, no question of breaking them. Then when he refused, he remained strong amidst his convictions, and knowing that if we stay strong in our convictions, then even if there seems to be all reason to give up the conviction, some way will come out and a proper resolution will emerge. Then Satyavati offered him another proposal. In the Vedic cultures, the begetting of a successor was very important, and there was a tradition, Devarena Sutotpattim. That means if the husband dies, then the woman, she needs to have a child who will become the successor of the dynasty. So then she can get a successor from her brother-in-law, that means the brother of the husband. Now we may consider this doesn't seem to be moral, but in the Vedic culture the primary emphasis was not so much on sexual enjoyment as it was on the begetting of progeny, and the primary purpose of marriage was also considered the begetting of progeny. So in emergency situations it was allowed, in fact it was recommended, that if this dynasty is in a danger of not continuing, then the king can ask somebody else, especially his brother. The king has passed away, then his brother can take that responsibility and beget children in his brother's wife, and that way the dynasty can continue. So then Satyavati requested Bhishma that if you don't want to get married, then just beget progeny in Amba and Ambalika. He said, no, I can't do that also. My vow is not just not marrying, my vow is a vow of celibacy. Celibacy means that I cannot do this. Then Satyavati became very pensive. And then she revealed a secret that she had not told to anyone till then, anyone from her husband's family. When she had been unmarried, at that time she was living on the banks of the sacred river Ganga, and many pilgrims would come by that way. So her father had told her that for you to get a good husband and for you to have a good life, you should do seva, you should do service. And the service she was asked to do was, the sages who go along that river and the pilgrims who come along that area, you should, in your boat, take them across that river. That's how you should do service. And she would do this service dutifully, along with her other family duties at home. So many times she would ferry sages across the river. And at that time, once the great sage Parashar Muni came over there. And when Parashar Muni came over there, and then he boarded the boat, and they started going along. And as they were going along, Parashar Muni, now this particular incident is often misinterpreted and misrepresented. Some people say that as Parashar Muni, as Satyavati was rowing the boat, Parashar Muni started getting looked at her and got attracted to her, seeing her body's contours being highlighted while she was rowing the boat. And then he had union with her because of that bodily attraction. Now that is a very partial and distorted understanding of the whole story. Parashar Muni is a great sage. And what happened was, as he was going along that river, in the Vedic culture, it is understood that there are auspicious times and there are inauspicious times. And certain things, if they are done at auspicious times, then they bring enormous results. Now, we may say that what is the idea of auspicious and inauspicious times? But when we understand that the whole universe is a network, an interconnected network, then we understand that doing certain activities at certain times brings different results than doing it other times. For example, if a farmer is to do farming, then somebody may say, what is so great about farming? You just plow the field, sow the seeds, and then they will grow. No, the farmers know that the plowing and the sowing has to be done at a particular time. A particular time before the rains come, or a particular time when the sun is going to be at this particular at this level of heat, depending on whether we want rabi crops or kharif crops or whatever. The important point is that a timing is required, because farming is not just an isolated activity. Farming is a connected activity. Farming is a human activity in the sense that human beings have to farm, but along with that, it's connected with the environment. And if it is a time when the rains are going to come, then that timing ensures, right timing ensures that there will be abundant yield. And if the farming is, if the sowing and plowing is done at a wrong time, then no matter how much endeavor is put, the right result will not come at that time. So similarly, in the case of, it is said that even in the case of union between male and female, it is not just an activity between the male and the female. Just as sowing the seed in the ground is not just an activity between the farmer and the field. Even the whole environment and the season and the right timing in the season is involved. Similarly, the male-female union is, should not just be done based on the desires of both of them. Actually, if an auspicious time is chosen and a proper consciousness is cultivated, and then the progeny that is attracted at that particular time in that consciousness is glorious. In the Bhagavatam, there is also the story of how Diti attracted, seduced her husband Kashyap to unite with her at a wrong time. And because of that, she begot terrible progeny. The demons Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu who wreaked terror all over the universe. So the timing is also important. So as Parashar Muni was going in the boat with Satyavati, he looked at the formation of the celestial bodies. He looked at the signs that were evident in the atmosphere, the sky, and he understood this is the time for a great soul to be born. And then he told Satyavati that this is the time at which the Supreme Lord desires to appear in this world as a great person, as a literary incarnation. And if you become an instrument, you become a part of the Lord's plan, then you will be blessed. Satyavati, she was shocked. She said, how can I do such a thing? He says that I'm not married and I cannot do this. And if I do this, then I will lose my virginity and then who will marry me? So Parashar Muni told her, don't worry. He said, if you do this as a service to the Lord to bring a great soul into this world, you will not lose your virginity. You will maintain your virginity, and not only that, you will get a special blessing, because you will bring a great soul into this world who will spread in this world the fragrance of spiritual knowledge. And therefore, your body, which will be the womb through which this great soul will appear, that body will also become fragrant. Now, she was a fisherwoman, and because of that, her body had a typical sort of fishy sort of smell. So when Parashar Muni explained to her, then she agreed. And then, as they were going along in the river and they were talking, so Satyavati's father, the Matsya King, was also watching as she was going along. And actually, a father wants to keep a watchful eye on his daughter. So, as they were going along the river, then Vyasadeva, so Parashar Muni, created a fog by his mystic powers. And in mystic power, he covered up everything. And not only that, he created a fog, but within that fog, he created actually an island over there. And then both of them united, and immediately at that time the great soul Vyasadeva appeared. And this Vyasadeva was Dvaipayana Vyasa. The word Dvaipayana has many meanings. Dvaipayana means that appeared at the junction of the two ages, and it also means that as a dvipa, there's an island that was created over there, and the island that Vyasadeva appeared. And Vyasadeva also appeared in a very divine way. not just divine in the sense the mysterious way in which he was born, but also after his appearance, he did not appear as a small baby who had to be breastfed and to be brought into life with extreme care. No, it was not that Satyavati became pregnant for 9 months. No, there was union and immediately the child was born, and then Vyasadev immediately grew up and Vyasadev left from there. And Parashar Muni also left from there. And thereafter, the Satyavati's body became transformed and she became very fragrant. When her father asked her, what has happened? He said that, you know, I served Parashar Muni and he has blessed me in this way. And actually it was this fragrance of her body that attracted Shantanu to her. So now Satyavati had not told this to anyone in her husband's family. But she told this story to Bhishma. And she told him that if you cannot beget a child, then I will call Vyasadeva. Now Vyasadeva was a great sage, but Vyasadeva was also a householder. We know Vyasa's sunum. Shukadeva Swami is called the son of Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva, when he left his mother, he told her that he knew his father Parashar Muni would not need him. The sages are Atmaram, they are self-sufficient. But he told his mother that if any time you need me, you can just think about me and I will immediately come over there. Now, he had the mystic powers. In the Vedic culture, it is understood that there are different people who have different mystic powers. So, just as I explained that the devatas have higher powers than what humans have, similarly, sages also have higher powers. They can perceive what is being transmitted through vibrations on the mental level also. So, Satyavati told, I can call Vyasadev. And Bhishma became very happy. And he said, yes, that is very good. You should call Vyasadev, and if we get a progeny through such a great sage, our whole dynasty will become blessed by it. So then Satyavati went to Ambika and Ambalika and told him that you should become ready because your brother-in-law will come and he will beget a progeny through you. So Ambika was the older among the two. So she became ready. And now Ambika had no idea that they had some other brother-in-law. So she was expecting Bhishma at that time. And when at that time finally Vyasadeva came, Vyasadeva was summoned by Satyavati, and as soon as he came, then Satyavati told her what has happened and requested him to beget a progeny through Ambika and Ambalika. So Vyasadeva had been performing austerities in the mountains, and he said that, you know, you give me some time. No, I am very unkempt and unclean right now. Give me 1 month, then I will prepare myself for this. So she said, no, we cannot wait. You know, we had two sons and still both of them died. And there was no progeny left. It's a national emergency. This cannot wait. Please, it doesn't matter. Do it right away. So then Vyasadeva went to Ambika's chambers. Now Ambika was expecting Bhishma over there. And she saw this stranger, you know, who was from the Kshatriyas are physically attractive. Sages are not physically attractive. So the Kshatrani, when she saw a sage. Now, for a sage could be respected by her from a distance, but to be united with a sage, and such a sage also who was not at all looking very clean, who had the signs of austerity on his body, and his body was emaciated, and at one level you could say that the body was also ugly. So she just got completely mortified. And Vyasadeva came close to her and she couldn't tolerate it. She just closed her eyes completely. And she closed her eyes and then Vyasadeva united with her. And then Vyasadeva left. And then Satyavati was just waiting outside. He said, what happened? He said, she was troubled to see me. And because of that, she closed her eyes. And because she closed her eyes, though she also permanently closed the eyes of the infant that was born. That the child would be born would be extremely powerful. He will be a worthy Kshatriya in terms of physical strength. But he will be blind. On hearing this, Satyavati was devastated. He says, how can a blind person become the king? The king has to fight. He needs to have eyes. He needs to have a complete body. She told him, "At please, you do once more, you know, go to the other princess, and other queen, Ambalika, and we get through her. Now, Ambika had told Ambalika what to expect. And so Ambalika was a little more prepared. But still, when she saw Vyasadeva, her whole face turned pale. And then when Vyasadeva and Ambalika united, at that time, because she had turned pale, Vyasadeva went and told Satyavati that because she has turned pale, this child who will be born will have a pale complexion, but still he will be a great hero. Now when she heard this, she thought, what does it mean, a pale complexion? Because he had a pale complexion, that's why his name became Pandu later on. And she said, okay, one son is blind, one son is, he's going to be a good warrior, he's going to be pale, but still, in case something goes wrong, we need one more son. He said, you go once again. And I told, now the two sisters, Ambika and Ambalika, neither of them were ready to unite with Vyasadeva. And then, what they did was, they just got a maid servant over there to sit in their place. Now the maid servant, she was not a Kshatriyani, and she did not have the expectations of a Kshatriya coming to unite with her. So when she saw this great sage come in, she immediately got up, washed his face, washed his feet, and worshipped him, and served him very respectfully. And then Vyasadeva united with her. And then because she was in a very receptive, prayerful consciousness, and because Vyasadeva, of course, was sage, he was also in a devotional consciousness always. So he begot, the child that was born through that was a very virtuous, learned and saintly person. That was Vidura. And when Vyasadeva came out, and Satyavati asked what happened, and Vyasadeva told her that the sisters had kept a maid servant over there. Now, Satyavati was infuriated, dejected. He said, you know, if we have a half son, how can he be the king? You know, he will not be a proper Kshatriya. So now Vyasadeva immediately saw what was in the mind of Satyavati. He said, no more. He said, you know, as a sage, it is important for me to conserve my energy. I have already expended my energy 3 times and I cannot expend my energy anymore. You will have to be satisfied with what has happened. So this may seem immoral at one level, but we see Vyasadeva's focus was not on enjoyment. If he had wanted enjoyment, he would have just accepted Satyavati's proposal and gone again and again to enjoy with the queens. But his purpose was just production of the progeny. And that's why later on when Dhritarashtra is born, Pandu is born. Now in the Mahabharata, Vyasadeva comes and repeatedly interacts with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra always treats Vyasadeva as a sage. And Vyasadeva always treats Dhritarashtra as a king. They don't treat each other as father and son. Although Vyasadeva has begotten them, but it was done as a service. So when a brother-in-law, say, begets a child in the wife, in his brother and in his sister-in-law's womb, that child is considered to be the son of that brother, not of the brother-in-law. So that's why Dhritarashtra doesn't refer to Vyasa as his father and Vyasa doesn't refer to Dhritarashtra as a king. So in today's sexually surcharged culture, where people think of sexual union primarily for enjoyment and very incidentally they think about procreation, that is very little in the minds of people. There was one European who said that practically all of America and Europe is born with two people drinking over all of America and Europe is born with two people having a cup of glasses of wine on a Saturday night. So people often, they consider sex primarily for enjoyment and procreation is considered an incidental byproduct. So with such a sexually contaminated attitude, we may not be able to understand this particular concept, but the important point in a culture, it was not that sex was not part of Vedic culture. It is. Krishna says in the Bhagavata, dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava, that sex life is not contrary to dharmic principles, is a manifestation of the divine. The man and the woman who unite, they get an opportunity to act as co-creators with God in bringing new life into this world. So, it is sex is also a way to experience the divine, but that is when it is within the precincts of dharma and procreation is the focus. So, that was the focus of Vyasadeva and that's why he did not become contaminated at all. And rather, he did the service and he left. And here we see again in this whole pastime, Bhishma's character, that he did not swerve from his duty, and because he did not swerve from his duty, eventually some other arrangement was made. So that also shows Bhishma's invincibility, not just in terms of fighting in war, which we saw when he was invincible even to the attacks of the foremost of all warriors, Parashuram. But here we see his invincibility even to temptations. Even when there's all justification to give up temptations, he refused to succumb to temptations. And such a great person, who was Bhishma. No wonder he is called as one of the Mahajanas in the Bhagavatam, one of the 12 great personalities who teach Dharma in an exemplary way by their words as well as by their actions. We'll continue in our next episode. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.